Good evening.
As Alan Lightman pointed out, one of the most interesting phenomena in drama in the last 20 years or so, it's been the number of plays which have been organized around scientific ideas or around the lives of scientists. There have been, for instance, as he mentioned, Arcadia, which is organized around the chaos theory, Proof by David Auburn, which deals in mathematical proofs and problems, and Copenhagen, where you have Heisenberg and Bohr arguing over ethical and scientific matters. It seems to me that this play, Breaking the Code, actually relates more to the granddaddy of all these plays because of its biographical thrust. And I'm thinking of Brecht's Das Leben des Galileis, the life of Galileo. Because for Brecht, Galileo is the perfect example of the intellectual in relation to power. In the first version of Brecht's play in 1937, Galileo is a sort of wily anti-fascist who manages to get his ideas across despite a repressive power structure. When he rewrote the play in 1945, after the A-bomb had been dropped, Galileo is now a quite different figure, a figure who is complicit with power in some rather tricky moral issues. He's not simply seeing the establishment as an antagonist, but he goes along with them for his own reasons. This is obviously a more interesting and complex situation. In the case of Alan Turing, you have a play set up in which you have a man who believes, as we saw in that wonderful long speech towards the beginning of the play, a man who believes in the power of the machine to solve problems. And yet what keeps tripping him up is his humanity, and particularly what would be regarded as a great rift running through that humanity, his sexuality. Alan Turing picked a particularly unfortunate time to be a homosexual. When you see him at Bletchley Park, you've got to remember that it's during the war. And during the war, both in England and America, both in civilian life and in the military, rules were relaxed. With the threat of death hanging over everybody's head, sexuality was something to be reveled in, to be entertained whenever it showed up, because who knew the next time you might have the opportunity. And so a lot of activity that would ordinarily be policed was winked at. But things changed very much after the war. They changed in England in particular because of the Cambridge Five. As you may be aware, two of the Cambridge Five, spies who had been recruited at Cambridge, were working for, allegedly, for the Russian Secret Service. And two of them, who were about to be found out, Burgess and Maclean, left England for the Soviet Union in 1951. Only the powers that be knew of this. It wasn't until 1956 that the general public became aware of it through the press. However, the fact that Burgess and Maclean were homosexual spurred a witch hunt throughout the lives of most of British, what we now call gay men, although the term was unknown then. Raids of clubs, raids of public toilets, raids on individuals who were above suspicion normally, people who suddenly were made the centers of high-profile lawsuits, journalists, noblemen, and so forth. The victimization of a particular sexual minority as the direct result of an international political situation was also true in this country, where, of course, McCarthyism saw Reds and fags as the same thing. And the State Department, the Pentagon, was purged of a lot of very inoffensive people simply on the basis of suspicion. So that Turing, who by no means was a flamboyant individual, had to live what we might call a coded life. Breaking the Code not only deals with the Bletchley experiments, but also with the fact that to be a homosexual in that society meant learning a cipher that you then would interpret at your own risk. For instance, there was a language, Polari, based on the Romani language, which was very common in show business and then proceeded to the homosexual subculture. If you used words from Polari or certain phrases, you knew that you were dealing with somebody you could trust, somebody who was a fellow traveler to some degree. Sartorial signals of various kinds. There were all kinds of little bits of code that could be issued that would enable individuals to feel that this is someone I can trust. Throughout the play, it seems to me that Turing is looking for that trust. He's not looking so much for the moment of passion, although the moment of passion is clearly a way in a one-night stand that you can gauge the relationship. He's looking more for a situation where he can be as comfortable with a human being as he is with a machine. Notice how so often he's looking for predictability, or he's looking for something which will be consistent, which will always provide the right answer in a certain case. That's fine when you're dealing with scientific laws. It's much more difficult when you're dealing with human behavior. And as you may be aware, his fate was a ridiculous one. Ridiculous by the laws of equity, by the laws of logic. He took somebody home who had a friend who broke into Turing's apartment and stole a few things. Turing very foolishly informed the police. The police put more than two and two together, and before you know it, Turing is in prison under a law of 1888, the Labouchere Amendment, which was the same law that had condemned Oscar Wilde, condemned all sexual activity between two males, whether private or public. Not only was he in jail, but when he was let out, he was put on a regimen of hormones, estrogen in particular, which worked as a chemical castration. His security clearance was revoked. He was not allowed into the United States. And in other words, all the things on which he had predicated his life, all the things which had enabled him to function as a human being, were suddenly pulled out from under him, and hence the very likelihood that he did, in fact, commit suicide. So here we have a man who is structuring the achievements of his life, his professional achievements, on consistency, on mechanical rectitude, who is continually being tripped up by the fallacies of human behavior and human sexuality. It's both farcical and tragical, which is one of the things that makes the play so successful. Thank you.